It's a big week when RHAP is on the road in Chicago. Check out my live show from Chicago. That's going to be up on Thursday, Wednesday night. Shannon Gus is going to be live with you with Kelly Wentworth after Survivor. And we preview the Dondi finale with Deal or No Deal Island host Joe Manganiello, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Welcome back to the Challenge USA 2 for Hap Up Podcast for episode 7 and 8. I am Brian Cohn. With me, as always, is my co-host, Alistair. Ali, how are you?
We back. How are you? Back from doing the office.
Great. Yeah. You know, we could have been doing one episode a week like the show is doing now, but we said, no, we love the format. We're sticking with two episodes a week, and this is what we're doing.
Someone should stick to the format. Normally it would have been like, oh, it's been 2 weeks or whatever it is since we last spoke, but not too long ago I saw you in person. So Yadis from the podcast, but not Yadis from real life.
Yeah, my wrist made an appearance in your Twitter.
So. Yeah, yep. Kiva Whitaker, stateside, had to get some sush, had to get some kosher sush. Or some juicy, yeah. As I called it to Chester in the Venmo.
I was telling Emily about the dinner on the way up. When she picked me up for the train, very nice. I was telling her about the dinner. I was like, I feel like I stepped inside a Seinfeld episode. I felt like it was like Jerry, George, and Elaine. And I'm not Kramer, but I just like felt like an audience member. And I'm like, this is such a wild dynamic, but it's very fun to be a part of.
See, I guess you're sort of the Jerry. Like, I've always said, well, we could talk about this. No one cares. This is more of a GOG podcast. You're welcome to come on and discuss that.
Sure. We'll save it for that.
I've always saw myself as more of a George, but I guess when Akiva's there, I can't really. We're famously a two George, two Ernie podcast of NGOG. I don't know about us here, but.
That's a good question. Who am I?
We're sort of outside of the Seinfeld canon, I think, on this podcast.
I think so. I'm trying to think of like a random character that I am, and I'm like blanking on any like other Seinfeld characters I could be. Maybe I'm like Jerry's dad. I don't know. I could be like Jerry's dad.
Okay, buys a house in the suburbs and calls himself 80 years old.
Yeah, honestly, I've always said I'm like aging into my personality. I'm close to it. I'm like not there yet, but it's like creeping up closer. So it's we're almost there.
All right. Well, please report back. Will we still be podcasting, do you think, when you hit your natural age? I don't know what you're calling it. Your internal age?
I think my 40s has always been like my demo, my peeps. So okay. We're closing in. We're not that far away.
All right. Well, yeah. No, Akiva's planning his 40th birthday. So you are right where you belong tonight.
Perfect.
All right. Well, let's. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm going to interrupt what we should be doing talking about episode 7 here to tell you something I should have told you in advance.
Love it.
But a fellow Wes Gurley, who I won't out because I don't know if she was supposed to do this, but I appreciate it. Shared with us a Wes Patreon video in our feedback form. So you should check that out. I didn't delete it, but it was Wes's like response and like formal comment on like whether this is his retirement season. So it's funny that you should say he's right where he belongs when he has reiterated essentially that he is cutting the challenge basically from his life for the foreseeable future.
That's what it seems like. That's what it seems like. But with most challenge retirements, I will never believe them. And until they are never back again, I will never believe it. And that means I'll just never believe it. Because in 20 years, I can think Wes is coming back. So not buying it.
Well, here's what I love about Wes is he's saying it's not a retirement. And Wes, again, has left before under similar sort of false retirement terms, right? Like he's taken a bit of a Yadis more than like Bananas ever actually did.
Absolutely. A couple of them, I feel like.
Yeah, he was like, I've got monster trucks. Yeah.
Yeah. He's always been kind of ebbing and flowing much more than like Bananas has.
I mean, if All-Stars, I mean, essentially for anyone who's interested, and maybe we should just talk more about this at the end of the episode, but he's not announcing retirement. He's like, right now, this doesn't work for me. And like it with my work more than even my kid. But now that I've got the kid and the work, it's like never really worked for me with work. And now it's definitely not going to work with the kid. And of course, he had to be Wes about it and said a lot of unflattering things to the other dads on the show. But he was like, I'm never saying never. I could make it work if they just like had more notice, but they are spread too thin because there's too many challenge seasons, which I probably agree with. And so like things are planned generally, like the way cast is set are set and whatever. It's just not enough notice for him with work. Now, if they were looking ahead to season 40 or 45 and they wanted Wes back and they could say like, we're shooting this in 6 months, we need you, like, or 4 months, he seemingly could make that work. It just seems like he gets kind of a last minute turnaround on the requests.
Right. And at least the one thing for Wes that he has going for him that other people wouldn't is I'm sure he gets a nice little payday just for showing up. So if you ever need to make a quick buck, like this is always there for him.
Yeah. And he has, again, something I like about it. He's not saying I'm fully retired. Never say never, but I probably won't be there for a long time.
Right. Exactly.
And then he is, not to be ageist, but he is hitting an age bracket where like his first yachtist, it's like, all right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to leave in my 20s or early 30s, come back in my 40s, whatever, wherever he's at. Mm-hmm. He takes a 10-year hiatus. Like, you know, Beth came back in her 50s. So who knows?
Right. Yeah. All possibilities are on the table.
All right. But that's sort of old business. Shout out to all the West stands in the audience and not in the audience. Sending you good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very late. I'm very tired. just with me. No, that's it for the challenge. That's it.
So we have Wes's like plea to like be nice to him. Basically, is like I just want to play with my friends. Very little. Some funny remarks. Fessy's not buying it. Alyssa's hooked, blind, and sinker. And Corey's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, my microphone is not picking up the melody coming from the smallest violin that I'm playing for Wes here. And the reason I'm not saying like, ooh, what like a fun, you know, this is sort of the like strategic appeal of stripping down and jumping into the pool. Like, I'm just the fun guy. Like, I just want to be friends. Like, I'm just genuine and nice to everyone. Like, let's just play fair. Swamp womp. The reason I'm not like giving it any kudos is because he's still, that is another part of like the Patreon video. His wife was mixing it up about this. Like, he is still kind of carrying that through, like, seriously, that maybe I would come back. Something he says in the video is essentially like, and it's, you know, not any more attractive to come back because I take these calls, I give business advice, like I'm there for like all of the kids of the challenge. And then I show up and they scheme behind my back and like they're not there for me. And his wife, who was tweeted about this too, was like, it breaks my heart to see like you take calls, you like put in the time for them and that they betray you and take it personally in the game. And I'm like, this is not the Wes we know.
No, it's not. And people aren't even like being personal with him. Like, things have been way more personal from a lot of other people, including Wes, to plenty of other people. So this is like, not even PG, this is like G level personal that has been taken to Wes on the show. It's just like they just don't want to work with the Mets. That's like their biggest gripe with them.
It's also very new era Wes to not be trying to work with the new people to get out the
right
bananas, the Wes's basically. Yeah. And so now that he has joined forces with his former enemies, he's pissed that other people are still like thinking of him as a target. And not to get ahead of myself here, but like Cassidy considers making a petty vote against Wes, decides not to.
Right.
And then Wes takes a shot at her, making it personal.
Yeah. And I am very much enjoying like the Wes and Cassidy, like brother, sister bickering with each other. It's been a fun subplot, these two going at it. I didn't think these two would like have any sort of interaction, but like it's been very, very fun to watch them kind of take jabs at each other.
I agree. I just like 100%. But like Wes is playing this more than anyone. Like, where's Cassidy's speech of being like a rookie who got screwed on her Survivor season, who just wants to play a fair game and is catching strays from Wes like the whole season?
Yeah, Cassidy's been so like been so nice to Wes, being like, oh yeah, I know what the type of enemy I created. He's so smart. He's so brilliant. He can rally the votes. Like, I don't want to do that. She's been like overly positive towards Wes.
Yeah. And so this is going to be the last episode that we actually have these like team structures. But It is funny to see Cassidy and Wes like have this conversation about being on one team and trying to bury the hatchet now, and that Chris and Monty and Tyler end up on one team. Like, now we're really seeing sort of the enemies with Desi and the vets together also on one team. Like, I wouldn't have been mad, honestly, if this continued. I know with the numbers, it wouldn't have worked, but the team structures were getting very, very interesting.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. I'm sure I would have felt maybe differently in a couple of weeks, and I'm not upset that maybe they pulled the plug on the team twist, like, or team format, like a week or two too early rather than a week or two too late. I'm okay with them kind of jumping ahead of it and going individual, but this didn't feel stale at all. By the end of it, I was like, oh, I guess the only thing that felt stale was like anyone that wins is just going to blue, which I guess kind of like took a little bit of the fun out of it. But other than that, it was, there was a lot of intrigue with how the team structure was set up.
Yeah. Oh, I stuck my hand in some goo and now that's going to be annoying the rest of the podcast. Sorry. like cleaning slime. Anyway, I just came out of my slime girl era. Now I'm stuck in goo. Okay. I want to highlight a conversation here because this is actually fun to take episode 7 and 8 together. Because Michaela has a conversation with Wes here. Mm-hmm. And then she has basically the opposite conversation with Bananas in episode 8. So I want to like analyze both of them as they come. But Michaela is like, makes kind of like a little bit of a comment to Wes of like, oh, you're going to leave our bedroom now too and like go to the dungeon, which amazing name for Bananas and Josh's bedroom. Mm-hmm. And like calls him out a little bit on pretending to be sad. And Wes tells us Michaela is a huge threat. She's really strong, but she's anti-vet. And kind of like needles her. It's like, I don't know what I did to you. Like, why are you so mean to me? Like, what have I done to you? Doesn't sort of acknowledge the counter games they've been playing. Doesn't acknowledge her threat level and give her credit to her face. And just kind of has this like fake kind of immature conversation. I think in episode 8, Bananas plays this perfectly and ends up with Michaela on her side, where he on his side, where here Wes just further alienates himself from Michaela.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure Wes did anything that bad, right? Because he did kind of set it up being like, look, I'm like gloves down. Like, what have I done wrong? Like, have I done something to you to like spurn this? Like, can we like talk it out? Like, I don't want to like have an enemy. Like, I want to kind of talk things through. So I can't even say Wes did anything wrong or Bananas did anything good, because Bananas almost took the same approach that Wes did, kind of like complimenting her and saying that she's a good competitor. I don't want you as an enemy. The only difference, I think, is just obviously the structure of the season when these conversations happen. I feel like when you're on an individual basis versus team basis, I feel like maybe Michaela's mindset is a little bit different of what the self-preservation mode would be and where those conversations took place.
See, I totally think it's a discredit to Wes. Certainly the circumstance helped, especially with Tiffany having gone out, that Bananas is able to say like, I'm not kind of coming to you opportunistically. Like, now I have a position. I'm not just loyal to everyone. I was loyal to Tiffany, and now a spot has opened up in sort of that category. But like Wes, I maybe I'm misremembering this a while ago, but I believe Wes told us in confessional that Michaela is a threat and is a good competitor and is smart. I don't know that he brings that to her and kind of gives her that respect. And then again, it's like, what did I do to you? Again, very personal. Like, Wes is taking this whole season personally, and maybe it's more in the context of the emotional, his heightened emotional status for everything we've already discussed. But, you know, it's obvious what his and Michaela's differences are. They've been on opposite sides of the house. Michaela is a smart rookie for these purposes. And of course, they have been working against each other. Why Wes is coming to her saying, like, what did I do? Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not productive to someone who's like strategic and playing this game thoughtfully. Whereas Bananas gives her credit, kind of sets the stage of like how they can work together, how it can be mutually beneficial. I think Bananas, while I'm not a Bananas stan, doesn't act entitled like to one. Her. No, sound but like he doesn't. Come on. I give credit where credit's due. He doesn't act entitled to her respect or her loyalty. Whereas I think Wes is like, well, what did I do? Why am I not coming from a place of a good place with you?
Yeah, I don't know. I read Wes's conversation not as bad. I feel like it was really trying to like lay down his swords and get on her good side. Maybe he didn't like compliment her directly to her, but I did get a sense like he wanted to at least fake. Maybe it was, maybe she wasn't able to read it was BS, because obviously Wes had the confessional right after being like, Michaela doesn't know I voted for her, but like she can't know that. So like, I think there was like a smidge of fakeness, and maybe Michaela was able to like read through that. And Bananas, I think, genuinely wants to work with him, wants to work with her. She, in these types of shows, he has a knack for wanting to work with the stronger women, of being paired with them to the end. So I wouldn't put it, I feel like that was more legitimate, and maybe she read it as fake from Wes.
Do me a favor, Brian. The next time you and Emily are in a fight, which I hope never happens. So let's say next time you're in a fight, there's like something, you've done something, or she's done something, and there's been a little frost going on.
Probably me doing something.
Okay, yeah. Sure. I mean, you said it, not me. But a few, you know, whatever. A few hours go by after your last conflict, and you just come in and you say, what did I do? What did I do for you to treat me like this? You let me know how that goes for you.
Okay.
That ends the fight. That ends the fight.
I can't wait for you know, episode 11. Old business. Well, I tried it. And now...
Remember that house in the suburbs? She owns it now.
Yeah. She took the dog too.
Less trouble in paradise going on with Tyler and Alyssa too, unbelievably bonding over their prior showmances. And I'm not the biggest fan of this couple based on nothing, so sorry to the Tyler and Alyssa two stands, but Tyler saying that Angela, whatever you think of Tangela, whatever you think of Angela, Tyler chalking Angela up to a great person for his big brother time, but not his person ultimately, is extremely rough.
Yeah, I mean, they were together, what, 4 years, like on the precipice of getting married? Like, I think it was a lot more than that. I think Alyssa could say that about Kyle, I guess, if she wants to. I don't know why she would, but like that fits more that. But Tyler and Angela, they were, I mean, they caused a lot of ruckus if people question their connection with each other.
Yeah, I would love to hear Angela's reaction. I haven't sought out Angela's reaction. I haven't, maybe she's tweeted or something, but it was like, yeah, Alyssa too is like just walked off the BB set and is no longer with that problematic non-fave, and is like, yeah, no, I'm glad he was with me in the house, but like we weren't meant to be. And he's like, yeah, no, you know, we were engaged, but it was pretty cash. Like, I hated this.
It was also a very funny confessional of Alyssa being like, no, I'm not, I'm definitely not here for a showmance, but if I were, I would definitely just do it with Tyler. It's like, oh, okay, then maybe you are. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, you know, just be true.
Ever since you pointed out last week that Tyler is like not giving, I feel like you've cracked a mirror for me. And now like everything he does is not enough. So like when he has the confessional and he addresses sort of the Angela breakup, which he hasn't really yet in depth, he's like, you know, we drifted apart. It's all good. It happens. It's life. It's like, bruh, you cannot explain your breakup like that when you are on reality television. Like, she's not there, but like, I've showed up here to get the tea.
Tyler doesn't feel like the gossiper though, so I'm not surprised that he's just like burying this one deep inside of him and won't really share the true feelings.
Then put your clothes in your duffel bag and go home. Like me, right. I don't have to come up on here and explain my relationships to the audience, but I don't get paid to do that.
Totes agree.
Despite what I've just asked you to do in your own relationship for our entertainment.
Exactly. Exactly.
But no, I think you poisoned me against him.
Well, you know what? Maybe, you know, he gets an elimination win under his belt coming up. So hopefully that'll fire him up. So maybe we'll have a new Tyler going forward. I doubt it, but you never know.
I mean, anyway, I don't know why I dislike Tyler and Alyssa 2's relationship. I don't really dislike either of them. I just like, maybe because I was sort of, spoiler alert, ready for Tyler to go home. Mostly because I don't really care about these moments. I'm not getting anything out of them. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, Leroy and Cam, which is not fair to like put them on that standard and that pedestal. But like, I don't really feel like it's like a fun, flirty vibe. I feel like it's weird to me. And I don't really want to see more behind the curtain of it. So like, I don't want more scenes of them throughout the rest of the season. I'm not shipping it.
Right. No ship. I don't mind Alyssa too. She seems sweet enough. But yeah, as a couple, it's, you know, It's not, you know, Cassidy and Josh, I guess. Although, you know what? That could be bring more intrigue. So maybe bring that one on.
In fairness, as a non-Big Brother head, like having not watched her season, I think I'm defensive. Like I'm I have a predisposition against her because of like that, because I didn't see for myself. Like, I don't know what happened. So I'm like, well, I definitely can't like her. Not can't, like my auto reaction is like, well, she was bad. So I don't want to wade into those waters, but sure. I don't have a personal issue with either of them. I'm just not enjoying really the scenes of them together as much. Unless Bananas and Wes are involved with puppet strings.
Right. That was fun. With the daily for episode 7, Wreck and Roll. Fun little daily. Two people are strapped into an oversized ball, and they have to roll around, knocking over tires from other designated poles, and the tires correspond to letters, and they have to use it to solve a word puzzle, 5x5 word puzzle. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, sort of giving Boggle. Can I say something controversial yet, Brave?
Only.
I could not admit this, audience, okay? Just recognize that I don't have to admit this. I could be like, it was a fine challenge. Brian could say what he wants to say. We could move on, and I wouldn't have to say any of this. But here I am, hand in goo, saying that, and you'll see later, I watched this episode probably the most intently that I've ever watched any episode of the challenge this season.
Wow.
And you'll see why later. I went down kind of a research rabbit hole that goes nowhere, spoiler alert. I wrote down in my notes daily. I stared straight ahead at my television. I thought nothing. I gleaned nothing. I didn't even know who won. And like it just completely washed over me, which is not what you're supposed to say as a podcaster. But here I am reporting live from the scene. I could not pay attention to this challenge.
So I enjoy a good, like, you know, oversized ball, like rolling around, knocking things over. Like, those are fun. The word scramble, or not word scramble, the word puzzle. A lot of the word budget is very high this year. They're doing a lot of word stuff. So that one wasn't that great. This was fine. I like the ones where there's a clear winner. Obviously, it's not doing a lot of heats, as we'll get to in episode 8. So this one was a perfectly okay challenge in my book.
I probably agree, because I didn't even register as something I didn't like or wanted to complain about. It was like surgery. I woke up, like, suddenly the challenge ended and I just had no response to it.
I'm just more mad. I feel like the show heard me compliment like my favorite scene, and now with the individual stuff, I feel like we're not going to get it as much, because we had another fun little, you know, pre-challenge interview talking about their Scrabble behaviors. Bananas beats his niece and nephew in it. Very fun. Little fun moments, but now that's gone. We don't really have any more pre-daily interviews.
Yeah, well, I would say, like, you flatter yourself, but you are mainstream challenge media now, so
it's true.
Maybe.
That's true. Well, when I wrote here Blue wins, I'm like, why am I talking about, like, freaking Big Brother right now? And then I realized that Blue's still in this universe. Blue is a team, but Blue wins.
So let's talk about the strategy going into this. I know that a lot of this, like, ends up becoming kind of stale by the next episode, but
sure.
Josh is going to target two survivor women. He's going to get kind of called out throughout the next two episodes of, like, why is Josh's plan to get rid of strong women?
Yeah, I mean, I get it from the standpoint of wanting to take out Survivor. If he's more the challenge Big Brother route, it makes more sense to take out Survivor people. I almost wonder if it's more of like a meta thing, where if he wants the house to target strong people, right? I guess for him, the strong women. Like, normally, if you're a strong competitor, right? Like, there's a point in the game where you want to keep strong people of the opposite sex. That way, you're potentially working with them to the end. So if he's going after strong people, maybe that will entice the women to go after strong men to counteract that. And he knows he's not one of those people. So in a way, it keeps him safe.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I think, like, also realistically, and like, I think part of what makes Josh a great challenge personality is that I don't know how much of, you know, his game is based in self-awareness. Definitely not none. I just genuinely don't know. I'd say that about everyone. Like, I don't know how accurately they can see their own sort of like win equity in a given season. We're watching an edited product. I don't know what they're seeing there. Just desperately trying not to be burning Josh. But at this stage, like the way, you know, Bananas later explained what a layup is, like it used to be in the old days that like there'd be a couple like personality hires who were physically very slight or weak and like they couldn't do anything and they might get dragged to the end and quit during an eating challenge in shame. But like those days are sort of gone. Like, yes, there might be people who are physically weaker or worse at eliminations, but they're extremely agile and threats in the final. Like we're at a point in the casting where like Josh, who is not weak compared to the average human, is considered one of the weaker athletic people on the show. Mm-hmm. Like, the work Josh would have to do to make a final where it's like him, Sebastian, maybe Tyler, like he'll never be able to make that outcome. He's never going to be able to get rid of Fessel and Bananas and Wes and get to the final. And if he tries that, he'll be screwed in every other season. So maybe it is just like the best I could do is try to just get to the final and hope that like I catch a break, I catch a good partner, Fessel mm-hmm. rolls his ankle and, you know, whatever, I'm getting paid regardless.
Yeah. I mean, the upside for Josh is Devin. Like we saw Devin. I think Devin's morphed himself into a better competitor and strategist than Josh is. But I think that's like the blueprint for Josh. I don't think like Devin could win an individual male final on his own, but he's paired with Tori. They had great communication, great partnership, and they were able to smoke the final. And I think Josh could do that with like even someone like Tori himself. So I think that's his upside, is getting to the end and hopefully being paired with someone that he could do it with. Obviously, if he keeps trying to take out all the strong women, that's not going to help his cause, but it's also kind of going to maybe help the gate some of his competitors in the end. But like that's Josh's upside for sure.
Yeah, and one of the teams has to catch a ball to the nose that takes them all out of the game, and sure. The best player has to be saddled with someone who's not that physical, and they still almost win.
You have to squint very, very tight to see the upside there for Josh. Very tight. Consider I call them the strong favorite. Yeah.
The strong favorite puts an impossibly to redo puzzle piece at the bottom, and so they just have to give up, and then you win.
Yeah, that's all.
Not to take anything away from Devin's very real win, but yeah, a lot of things have to come together, which is why, yes, Josh kind of should be, even though it doesn't make sense to Michaela and doesn't make sense sort of on paper of challenge strategy, Josh really does just need to rock with loyalty to stronger people because he's going to lose either way, unless he wins, and then he'd beat the stronger people too, a la Devin.
Yeah. It would be genuinely very funny if Josh and Devin somehow win the show before Fessel. Like that would be very funny.
Something wasn't so funny. Tiffany has a little bit of a breakdown, feeling like she's not giving enough, similar to what Desi was giving a few episodes ago. And just, you know, we get a little bit more insight into Tiffany's story about her losing her father at a young age and being a strong single mom. And like, if Tiffany is doubting herself, like, what chance do any of us have?
Right. It's tough because obviously, like, Tiffany was so iconic and so great on Big Brother, which, I mean, like, to be fair, that game is much more suited to her skill sets, obviously. Like, the way she can socially manipulate people, put herself around good people, kind of direct conversations. Like, the challenge is just much more of a physical game, and that's not Tiffany's strong suit. So this is a very much more difficult terrain for her to navigate. And it's sad because she is very fun. Like she brings a lot to the table outside of what like a physical player can do. So it's, you know, it sucks to see her going through that.
Yeah. And I think it's so hard because I think like the secret garden of which Tiffany is a part and what Desi's a part of,
seems like Dunzel, which they didn't even acknowledge anymore. Like they got so much heat, right? The first few episodes. Now it's like, they don't even mention it.
But it was sort of like this driving force in the first few episodes. And it's interesting / ashamed to see like women, particularly women of color, both having this sort of self-doubt moment. I'm not good enough to be here. I'm not performing well enough to be here. And, you know, sure, Tiffany isn't the most athletic, but as you said, she's been really fun. She's made some strategic moves to sort of zig when the Garden wanted to zag. Like, she, I think, hasn't necessarily gotten enough of her footing in the challenge to certainly do what she did on Big Brother strategically, but the like roots are there. And I will always, like, I will say this, and you can record this if I ever change my mind, like, any challenge that Tiffany gets cast on, I will always be excited and optimistic to see her on the cast. So I hated seeing this. I didn't hate seeing it. Like, I felt bad seeing this moment from her, particularly when she ends up going out. But I love Tiffany, and there's definitely room. And I know you weren't saying this isn't true. Like, there's room for every kind of person on the challenge in terms of, maybe you're not the biggest athletic threat. How do you navigate it? What's your social game? Like, what's your puzzle game? So, you know, just sending love out to Tiffany.
And we see people evolve their game, right? Like, we see people that seem to be much more like, oh, just there for fun, or there for a strategy, or there for whatever. And then they can, you know, if they want to take it more seriously, dedicate time to, like, making themselves more of a physical player, and they can morph themselves into a more well-rounded player. Like, that is not certainly.
Stop talking about Devin. You're so obsessed with Devin. He's not in the season, Ryan.
I'm just saying, it is possible. People do evolve with Jade. So it's, you know, do not just boggle into one archetype their whole journey.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the blue team's deliberation where none of the thing. Oh, yeah. Like, this is so confusing. Sorry. So Bananas, Tori, Wes, and Fessel vote together for Michaela. I got a dog Fessel here. We haven't seen much of him this season, but he's sort of straddling the Big Brother Vets alliance. Really, it's like there's the Vets, and then all of the Vets have different spokes. Like, Tori and Bananas seem to have Sebastian, maybe Chris. Wes, you know, I don't know where he is.
Doesn't really have anyone.
Fessel has sort of this Josh Big Brother, like, little spoke. So it's really like the Tori Bananas have more of the Survivor connection. The Fessel and Corey and Josh have the sort of Big Brother side. Fessel very discreetly, very casually goes, I'm going to side with the challenge veterans and vote for Michaela. Like, you could just vote for Michaela. You don't need to announce that to the room.
Yeah, people do seem needs as if they're, like, you know, doing the Julie Jen preface of, like, why this person is voting for the person, just, like, doing it for themselves. Like, I'm voting for this person because I've been aligned with them since day one. Yeah. And it would be a surprise if I turn my back on them now. Like, you just say the vote.
No, it's so true. So Seb and Seabass and Cassidy vote for Tiffany, and Desi votes for Alyssa too. Okay. I mean, she is closer to Tiffany and Michaela. And then Tyler catches all the Vet votes besides inexplicably Wes, and adds Sebastian as well. And then Desi votes for Monty just for spite, which I really respect. And Wes votes for Chris for personal reasons.
But Wes can't figure out why people have a personal problem with him. He can't figure it out. There's no reason for it.
So the plan here, I think, as it was intended, is for. Originally, in Josh's plan, he wants Tyler to be the decoy and have two strong Survivor women go up against each other. But if I were Survivor, I would still want to take a shot at Tyler.
Yeah, I was surprised there wasn't much of, like, a counterattack by the Survivor people to try to combat that, right? Like, the only, like, Monty got one vote, Josh got a vote, Corey got a vote. So there's just those three going after Tyler. So there, it was a little bit of a womp womp attack, but I guess they just went along with it.
Yeah. And, like, I still wish I knew what the plan, I know it will reveal itself, but I do wish I knew what the plan is for this gender imbalance. But something for another day. Michaela calls Josh out here, which was so fun, and Josh flips out. I was waiting for Michaela to be like, stop playing Big Brother, because Josh gives a very Big Brother response of, like, the house wanted to target a strong girl, like, why do you think it's me? And I just think Michaela schools him so well here. I love that she gets to blow off a little steam at Josh's expense.
Yeah, it was great. Michaela, like, set him up so perfectly. All because, as you see later, all it takes is one little turn and Josh will get fired up. Sometimes he does it on his own. Sometimes it's warranted. Sometimes it's not. But if you want someone to just, like, pop up, like, just throw any little dig at Josh and he will give you the reaction.
I also love, it's like back in the day when people would say no offense before they said something absolutely scathing. Mm-hmm. When somebody says respectfully after saying something very disrespectful, I eat that up like cake. Like, I'd love that. Keep my name out of your mouth. Respectfully. Just respectfully.
That's good. I like that. We should bring that back. Or just bring back no offense. No offense.
Like, no, respectfully is like even more adult and worse. Like, mm-hmm. Look, I hate you, but respectfully.
Right. Is that, so that's the espresso martini to the Four Loko revolution?
Yeah. Like, no hate. Like, no hate. You're terrible, but I respectfully. I love that.
Right. They said respectfully. What are you supposed to say? I mean, they said respectfully. They can say whatever they want.
I take that from a 10 to a 5, at least on the anger scale, once you add the respectfully.
Totally.
All right. As you said, the Secret Garden sort of dissolved, but it's very interesting because Desi does kind of come back to Chanel and Michelle and like fill in on what happened, the deliberation. We get a little clip. Michelle is telling us that she's working the entire house and the edit does support her, like showing her in conversations mm-hmm. with everyone. Do you think this is going to blow up in her face? Or do you think like we're getting set up to see like really what social game Michelle can do?
I mean, things have usually gone very swimmingly for Michelle on the channel, so I don't imagine it blowing up in her face. But I do think this is actually going to play out well for her. I feel like they are setting up of like when the survivorship crumbles, Michelle has outs and life rafts that she can grab onto that other people don't. I think we're seeing Michaela starting to do that as well. But I think for other people that have kind of clung to this survivor grouping, they're going to be the first ones down, and like they might win an elimination, but they're going to be the first target of, you know, when the guns turn on themselves.
Yeah, I didn't think that this was going to be a season that Michelle was able to sort of dig her way out from after the first sort of like, you know, John A target at her and, you know, Wes told me not to trust her kind of thing, the vibes against Michelle, but she's really managed to find stable footing. Even as the Secret Garden sort of dissolves, she is, like you're saying, kind of working the survivor angle without like remaining too fixed to it, still kind of giving her respect, respectfully working with the vets. And again, I do think this is the first time in the challenge we've really seen her winning survivor game. I don't know that this is her season to win. In fact, I don't think it is, but we are seeing, like, I think what made Michelle the winner of that season of Survivor. And so it's nice to kind of see her in a little bit of a real position instead of just like constantly being at the bottom or being a little bit like paranoid and involved in kind of the wrong messes.
Yeah, I know. It'll be very interesting to see how Michelle kind of handles this. Because, yeah, she does have a lot of outs. Like the people that have really thrived this season without much blowback or anything are those like in betweeners, right? Like Michelle, Fessel, Josh to some extent. Like those are the people that have positioned themselves pretty well in this group.
Yeah, no, true. I mentioned this before, but I did a lot of research here, and it comes because we got clear signage of this club that they go out to.
Ooh,
and
exciting.
Brian, do you remember where this season is filming?
I do, actually, amazingly. This is filmed in Croatia.
Okay, excellent. It is filmed in Croatia. I only know that because I had to look it up to look up this club, because when I searched it, it was EPVLON was the sign we see. So I searched that, thought it would come up immediately, put that nightclub, nothing. Okay, then I had to look up where they were because obviously I remember it, Croatia. Nothing. It was like a wine bar. And then I looked up the city in Croatia they're in, which I believe is Pula, P-U-L-A, I think. I didn't have that written down, so that's off the top of the dome. Never been to Croatia, sadly. Nothing. Couldn't find this place. Then found like kind of a restaurant with the same name. Then did the internal shot of the restaurant, tried to match it up with this like shred bra. I became obsessed with finding this club. I cannot confirm that this club exists.
Do you think they didn't have like, is it possible that like they lost the rights to film there, so they had to put a fake name up, or?
But why would they? Why put anything up? It's like it's like Karma was like Spawn on Jersey Shore. Like, why are we showing a name of a club that is unfindable?
I don't know. I got no answer for you. None.
It was fruitless. I was ready to read reviews. I wanted to look at the menu. I was interested. Got nothing for you.
Womp womp.
I spent like 20 minutes. I had to rewind the episode because I spent so long looking into this.
Another thing you didn't have to admit, but I'm proud of you for doing so.
Well, I want to validate, but the work I spend here sort of validates how much I was paying attention. So I'm able to kind of say, well, I tried on the challenge. You did.
TJ loves trying.
Yeah, me too. So you're trying. Wes and Bananas are trying to get something to happen with Tyler and Alyssa too, which honestly, fair enough. They have had the slowest burn for like the challenge house of all time.
Not AmeriCorps slow. Not AmeriCorps slow, but still also slow.
That is lost on me. I don't appreciate the appropriation of our branding here, calling Alyssa 2, calling them the drunk uncles, although it is accurate.
It is accurate. It is very funny. I like how they're like almost not taken seriously. I did also like Tyler confirming consent before he went in for a kiss. Go Tyler. Give him credit for that one.
By saying, how do we save me? How do we save me?
No, but like before when the drunk uncles were pitching and he was like, she wants this, right? I'm not just going to go like run up to her and kiss her. So like, you know, good for him. Look, the bar's low. I'm trying to squeeze out some juice for positivity for guys here on CBS here.
Yeah, when you're seeking consent, always go to two drunk guys at the bar to ask if she would be interested.
That's true. Wes and Bananas, maybe not the best ones, but you never know.
First, I'm concerned that we have no listeners and nobody's watching the show because I can't believe we didn't get a single tweet about them saying drunk uncles on this episode.
I gotta be honest, I didn't put that together until you just said it. So I'd be a bad listener also.
All right. Well, Zach says, speaking of listeners, Zach says, does it make you miss old school challenge when Bananas and Wes do something so dumb as blackmail people to make out?
It is fun. Like the I don't know why they didn't do it the first few weeks, but the night outs have been fun. They've been doing some fun little games with the Bachelor thing from the previous week. This is fun. You know, it doesn't all need to be like, you know, intense drama and stuff like that. A little fun joking around is fun.
We love a little fun. Mm-hmm. It was giving old school vibes. Loved it.
Yeah, and they went back to the house. They were making out on the bed, talking about how they're not going to do showmans.
They did sexile the rest of the four beds. It's like very difficult to get privacy on the challenge. So kudos to them, I guess.
Maybe CBS, you know, they're bringing all the MTV stuff, bringing the Boom Boom Room. Just give them that.
Bananas will push you into making out and sort of finesse your romance, but he won't give you his tips and tricks on where to hook up in the house without the cameras, which he's famous for.
Would scare him and then smooch him be good on a tote?
I don't think that goes back to your consent issue. Like, I don't know if that's sending the vibe. let's tally the votes all over the place.
Yeah, but and yet, oddly, no confessionals, but oh my God, who's doing this? This is so chaotic. What's happening? It's almost like that didn't matter. Opera this week. Yeah. Two for Tiffany, one for Monty, one for Alyssa 2, one for Josh, one for Corey, and four for Chanel.
Yeah. Sadly, with only two votes, ends up being Michaela versus Tiffany. Not what most of the house wanted. This decision was made by Corey and Michelle. So definitely two people with not the most amount of like strategy that we're aware of, but mm-hmm. they do cast the deciding votes this week.
They do. They do. And unfortunately, Tiffany goes down, gives a little bit of a confusing speech to start about how everyone's afraid to go into elimination. And then somehow it gets skewed to Josh. I don't know where Josh thought it was about him, but I was a little, I didn't really understand where Tiffany was coming from. And then more so didn't really understand why Josh thought it was about him. So this whole thing didn't make much sense to me.
Okay. Firstly, I have to call out Josh because he says in a confessional, like, we wanted to give Michaela a strong competitor to be against. And now, like, oh no, we're going to lose Tiffany, which, like, you're embarrassing for that. You didn't even say respectfully. And that was so rude to say. Like, I wanted Michaela to go against someone strong. Like, not, I didn't want to lose my ally who's weak as hell. Like, that's annoying to me. One. Two, I love that Tiffany popped off. Like, certainly not what you should be doing going in. Like, I think Fessel says something like, this isn't Big Brother. Actually, the first time someone has said this isn't Big Brother and it's made sense, like your game's not over. It's not like you got backdoored, like get your head in the game, pop off when you win, like whatever. Mm-hmm. But I loved this from Tiffany because she's sort of addressing like this is now an unfair number of women's days. The men are controlling these votes. You know, granted, a woman did vote her in, but like the men from her perspective, seem to be controlling the votes so they never have to go in because they're scared and they should get themselves down there and fight and stop being babies. Now, like, I don't think that's like the problem, but I understood where she's coming from, because right now, like, this elimination will make it, you know, 5 women to 3 men who have left. And one of those weeks, it was double elimination. So like only, it's only been a men's day twice. So it's sort of a fair complaint that it's constantly a women's day. But Josh, of course, feels attacked, because back to his level of self-awareness, he's like, if you're calling the men afraid, then you must be talking about me, because I'm the only scared man here. Like, you tell him yourself by freaking out about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, you do. Did you think there was any chance when Tiffany's like, if you're like, if you're so brave or you're not so scared, like, you should come down here? Do you think there was any chance Josh's ego was going to get in his way and he was going to start walking down and, like, to prove himself, go into elimination?
Hell no, because Josh is the person who's like, hold me back so that I can look like I'm trying to swing, but I don't actually want to swing. I'm not trying to scrap.
It would have been fun, but no, probably not.
And I also think, like, if somebody wants to blow off steam because they're going into the sand, as Tiffany says, like, shut the hell up. Like, I know you're on TV and you're literally half of the Gus and Josh fight for attention. But if someone's blindsided and 2 balls put them into the elimination against one of their best friends, let them say what they need to say and you don't need to respond.
Yep. 100%. 100%.
All right, let's talk about this elimination, because while the Daily didn't get me, who thinks of these things? Like, this would be an excellent challenge on Survivor in some way.
It would be. It would be an excellent, like, thing if they had it, like, in the city of, like, it's like Topgolf, but, like, for basketball. This would be a lot of fun to do, it feels like. Where you're strapped to a pole. No, not fun. Okay. Just, no, keep going. Sorry. You're strapped to a pole and you have to swing it back and forth and shoot a basket.
Yeah, this looked truly, truly terrifying, but very cool. Michaela does end up winning 10-1 and gets a little bit of a dig on, I believe, Tommy, when she says, I can do a lot without a partner. Slay.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I even got that. Yeah, good for her.
She'll continue to show what she can do without a partner, because TJ announces no more teams. It's every man and woman for themselves from here on out. Best of luck to your boy, Josh.
Yeah, I almost thought when he was announcing, like, oh, just, like, go back to your team, I thought I was going to be very upset, being like, oh, they're just, like, blocking people from, like, the way he was building up. Like, oh, you built your team, you built your trust, like, this is it. I thought he was going to say, like, this is your team. And I wouldn't have liked that. I would have liked them to have, like, notice of when the teams were going to be locked. But, we're going to individuals. Twist changes everything.
It's like, you've built your team and now you're only competing against your team. One person will walk out victorious. One man and one woman will make the final from each team.
That would actually be kind of fun, too. Yeah, that would be interesting, because then the smaller team, it's like, oh, you got better odds of making it.
Yeah, it doesn't work for our purpose. Although, honestly, if that happened like 2 episodes before the final and it was just sort of like a purge amongst the teams, very unfair, quote unquote, but I'm here for that.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a Jordan Kalish game setup, which would have been a lot of fun.
All right, let's get to episode 8. A Big Brother is like mourning the loss of Tiffany. Alyssa, too. Oh my God, I'm the only Big Brother woman left. Like, we're down to 3 new Big Brother people. Like, only one true new Big Brother person has left, and that's Tiffany. And even if you consider Alyssa 1 a non-vet, which, like, fair enough, it was just 2 people.
I guess it's also like mourning the fact that, like, the Big Brother people that we thought could be with us are definitely not with us. So, yeah. And also, like, Survivor just, like, never goes home. There's that. I think it's just a lot of things kind of bubbling up there.
Yeah, we talked about Bananas and Michaela's new sort of alliance. I wouldn't say it's like a strong line, maybe a dashed line on the chart that no one's making. Mm-hmm. Here's something interesting. You watched Alyssa 2's Big Brother season. She says she's struggling with the game that's based on lying, cheating, and backstabbing. Like, it's certainly, if I were to describe Survivor, Big Brother, and the challenge, I would not start with, like, the challenge is the one that's based on lying and backstabbing.
Yeah, definitely not. And certainly not, like, what Alyssa's been doing this season. Like, what, has she told a lie? Like, what, she lying to the camera about not wanting a showmance? Is that what she's talking about? Like,
Tyler's hats?
Right. Like, I feel like she's been as honest as you possibly can be. So I don't know what, like, I mean, look, if she's going through, like, I'm sure the game does, like, tricks on you and stuff like that and may put you in the pressure cooker. But, like, I don't know what lying stress Alyssa 2 has had to deal with. Maybe, like, being Alyssa 2, just like, oh, my God, I'm not Alyssa 1.
Big Brother, of all of the games, like, you know, Survivor happens in a 3-day period and you don't always go to tribal council. So if your tribe wins, you get a break. Like,
yeah.
Big Brother, you literally have to parade a lie around your entire house for a week every week until you go home. Like, that's like, it's the most lying game of all time.
It's very odd. I don't know where this was coming from, but maybe she was just trying to connect with Tyler on some level. But
aren't we all?
Anything for the daily? Anything before the daily, I guess. Anything else? Because this was my, like, oh, can I hit the watch this on 4-speed one? Spell Lunkers. That in 4 heats of 4, you have to swim down to look at a words puzzle again to see what the theme is of the words you can find. Race up and punch in the code. Get a flashlight and do it all over again, this time in dark waters. Use the flashlight to see what the word is and then go back out. And see who the eight winners of the 4 heats to see who had the best time of those 8 people.
Okay, so this is so fascinating because I'm normally with you 100% on like too many heats. Like you do 2 heats and I'm out. But I really liked this version only because I'm not saying it was the most interesting or dynamic challenge, but one, they finally got the memo and were like, you're not able to watch the other heats. I feel like normally they would just be far enough away to like not see the combination. It would still be the same combinations.
Yep.
But they got lucky in that like each round of 4 people had such a different approach to whether they worked together, who they worked with, at what point they worked together. Did they give a clue? Did they just tell them the answer? Like, I actually thought it ended up being interesting for that reason and that reason only.
I will give it that. That was the one intrigue of this daily was who would help who, why would they help each other, and what was their reasoning, who decides just to take the answer for themselves. That was the one interesting part. Just it was just so hard to judge like who won. Like the fact that, like when they were like, oh, one person smoked everyone and won by 6 minutes. I could not believe by the edit that was bananas. It seemed like he finished it like so quickly and like seemed like Tori was struggling or like, you know, or much more closer to the pack. So it was so hard to determine who was doing well, obviously. So there's no sense of like who the 8 were. It seemed like bananas won, but for the women, and it could have been any of the 4, theoretically. So that was the biggest thing for me that I was like, I have no idea who's going to win.
Yeah, it's a common complaint that we have here on the challenge, no matter what challenge we're watching, on what network we're watching it on. To me, there was no downside in giving timers. Like the second Tori was finished, we should have logged what her time was. So either people don't pay attention and it would have still been a reveal, or people who are really into it would have like clocked it and been into it. And you could have aired this order in any order. So if you wanted intrigue between Josh and Bananas, you leave it as it was and have Josh's win go last and tell us what the time is when Josh finishes. Or you have Tori go last if you want to just see her absolutely smoke everyone. But like there would have been nothing lost if we saw like the actual times the teams clocked in at.
Yeah, would have been weird. Very odd reaction from Sebastian, right? Like he is turned on that Tori doesn't want to help him. That was an interesting spin zone in his head, I guess. But I mean, they went on a date later, so maybe there was something there. But it was very, very interesting. But like, yeah, Tori like left me in the dust, didn't want to help me to try to win. I really like that about her. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, men will really make anything work for them. Like Wes does it. He's like, I can't believe it. I thought we were going to work together. Tori does it. Hot. Okay. But I think Wes saves him. I actually didn't like that Wes makes such a public spectacle of not helping. Again, where Bananas kind of finesses it pretty smartly, both unintentionally and intentionally. I don't think he thought they would think pause, P-A-U-S-E, when he gives them the clue that the hint is pause, P-A-W-S. But giving them sort of a word acts like he's helping them. I think Wes saying, sorry, can't, I'm in a worse position, can't help you, is too rough when he's committed to helping them, just like a little bit too deceptive unnecessarily. But I think he saves it a bit when Tori shows up first and then he's like, all right, well, you're my ally. I'm going to help you. So at least he doesn't like lose face with his own allies.
Yeah. And it did also add credence to the other notion where we sometimes see people complain when people are yelling out answers and help and eliminations, where I think we've all said, like, well, if they're yelling it out, everyone else can hear. And like they all have all said that, like, well, if I yell out the answer, everyone else is going to hear it. So maybe people should like take that under advisement. And when it happens in elimination, realize when they're shouting out to help one of the people, the other person can certainly hear it as well. So pipe down on that one.
Very true. What did you think of Chris's approach where he, Chris, Josh, Desi, and Corey, probably the team that has should work together the least, like based on where the alliances are, like they're probably the least aligned group of people. And they agree to work together so much that they're just like, we're going to put all of our eggs into Josh and Desi's basket. Like Corey and Chris don't even like really swim to the last checkpoint. They're just like, go Josh, go. Do you think Chris, this is a good play, or is Chris being too naive to like trust Josh on the back of an IOU?
I don't mind it from Chris's perspective, because I feel like he is trying to build that alliance with Josh. I feel like they've had good conversations those last couple of weeks. I feel like he recognizes that, similar to like Michelle, where he wants out from, not out, but he wants outs from the survivor grouping if things fall apart, and he sees Josh as that person. So I don't mind it from doing this, especially because this is the type of thing where you can, like, if you don't think you're have a good chance to win, it is like a good false facade of like, oh, see, like I'm helping this person and maybe this will help me, if you don't even think like, oh, I might not be able to win this one anyway, and if I have to win it, I have to like burn bridges to do it. So it might be more worth it just to pretend at least you're still working with the person.
I agree. I think he also generally knows that Tyler and Monty are still kind of their shields for him.
Totally.
And yeah, he probably has more to gain, even if, and like Josh is kind of known for his loyalty, even if Chris hasn't been watching the show. He's kind of saw how he was like Amanda's only ally in the house, and Josh really gained nothing from that relationship but still rode for her. So, you know, I think it's a little naive to really think this would matter for someone. But if Josh won, I would have been hard pressed to see him putting Chris up for elimination. So it just saved him the one vote. Good for Chris.
And one of the people I think it would have more of a positive and even a strong negative reaction to would be Josh. I feel like Josh would be the type of person that would really hold it against, means more so hold it against Chris if he like left him in the dust or something.
But as you said, Tori won by 6 minutes. Made no sense to me. Came down to Bananas alone versus Josh with the help of the team, and Bananas still wins.
Yeah, I mean, look, the vets get it done. The top two of the vets that you would expect to win these type of things, they go ahead and win it. Back in power.
So Bananas and Tori's first move is to approach Chanel, Desi, and Michaela and broker a deal, convince them to have the Jordan and Tori mindset of, you want to run the final with strong people, because really, more than you want to run the final with us, we are the group that's most likely to win these dailies. So let's all protect each other so that when I win next time, I don't have to come after you. What did you think of this pitch?
I mean, they've been making this pitch, I feel like, all season. So, I mean, I think this is the first time it seems like they're more receptive to it. So I don't mind them going back to the well, because this is the pitch that Bananas and Tori have. Like, I don't know what else they can really do than just try to be like, just let's all just stick the strong people together. And I think it makes complete sense for Desi, Michaela, and Chanel just to agree to it right now. It would be kind of wild for them to be like, no, we're going after you next time, so throw us in. So I think you have to agree to it. I don't think they should agree to it. I think, or they should agree to it to them, but in their head be like, no, we're still just going to go after them going forward.
I agree. Like, maybe someone like Desi, who has some final experience, but Chanel and Michaela have to get focused, and really Desi, on getting Tori out, I think, for the final.
And I think they're setting up the person that they want to try to do it with. I feel like with the conversations with Michelle, I feel like that's, if they're looking for someone strong that maybe could take Tori out, and you're not going to want to, like, obviously Desi doesn't want to do it herself or risk it herself. Like, I feel like the person that they could be eyeing to do it would be Michelle.
Interesting. We'll see how that plays out. I don't think after everything the Secret Garden has done, they're going to go down just being aligned with Tory and Bananas. But I don't know. It was also a very interesting conversation when Chanel and Michaela seek the guidance of Bananas. Like, I'm kind of liking them as a little trio in scenes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But like, what should we do? And Bananas kind of throws out like, you should be making it Amends Day. You should be targeting Tyler.
Yeah, no, those three together have been a lot of fun. They play off each other very, very well. All kind of seemingly like different personalities. They bring different things to the table. So like, yeah, that trio. I think going back to the question from last week, like who of the new people are like making the most impact? Like this trio for me is making the most impact.
Definitely agree. So from Banana's perspective, though, with this advice, where he's perhaps more worried about Tyler as a threat, either in the final or just in the game, versus the threat of having Alyssa too as a partner for a portion of or all of the final. Do you think that's more of a credit to Alyssa too, that like while she's the quote unquote weakest woman that they've identified, she's still a totally passable final partner, particularly for an experienced vet like Bananas? Or is it more of a credit to like, my bigger threat is Tyler or Monty, like I've got to get some of these strong men out?
It's tough. I think they're just like recognize the person that the survivor people would want to target. And like, this is their best way to broker the deal. It's like, we have to find like common ground with these people that are keep coming for us. And like, they want to go after Big Brother. So let's just find the common ground and be like, oh, we'll go with you. We'll try to get Tyler and Monty. Like, see, we're not so bad. We'll work with you. Like, I feel like that's almost more what it felt like to me.
Yeah. But it's also like Chris, like some of the other men, like Chris and Sebastian have demonstrated more of a willingness to play ball with the vets. And Alyssa too, like really, I mean, it's kind of a no brainer for the women to vote against Tyler, because not only would Alyssa too not be a threat to them in their opinion in the final, like would rather have Alyssa too around in case they end up getting voted in to an elimination. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is quite sad. Like it was funny now to do these two back to back, because it is funny to see like Bananas and Wes plotting to try to get Tyler and Alyssa together and now plotting to get them split apart. So it's been quite the arc for the drunk uncles.
I have two massive complaints here spread across the two sides of the house.
Perfect.
The first is, Tyler, respectfully, you being interested in going to elimination to save Alyssa too is the dumbest thing of all time. I don't know how much control he had, but like, how dare you? That's embarrassing. Maybe we could spin it of like, you need numbers, so you're willing to go in to protect your number. But I did not enjoy the romantic gesture story arc of it all.
Yeah, and like, I mean, if it was for a different reason, but like, this is what we just saw with Tyler with Big Brother. Like, he felt bad and he was like sacrificing himself for Bailey and Yvonne. Like, we just saw this, like, play for yourself, Tyler. Like, that's where people really fell in love with you as a player, was when you were so like self-interested in BB20. And now it's like, you just get to a certain point, it's like, let me sacrifice myself for the greater good. It's like, if you're just keep doing that, then don't come back, because we want to see people try to win.
Meanwhile, from the brain trust on the other side of the house, after targeting a power couple, Tori decides to publicly stay in with Sebastian instead of going out with the rest of the house, which is a move that I haven't seen since like freaking like Danny and Melinda in the Real World, when like somebody was like, ew, like you don't just like stay in. I've never seen somebody just like opt to stay in for no reason.
Very, very odd. Very surprising. I almost feel like there had to be something else going on, because it was like that. Why would they like agree to do that? Especially because it doesn't seem like Tori has like any interest in Sebastian, like negative zero. So I don't know like what she's doing, but it felt so odd.
Why, after targeting a showmance, would you be the most public about your showmance? It better to go out and have a drunk makeout in front of everyone, then stay home and let people imagine what's happening at home.
And they were just like guessing each other's middle name. It was like, just go to the
unprecedented
bar. Go to the unnamed, like unmarked bar.
Jason Warren says, is Sebastian's showmance with Tori real, or more of him trying to get a storyline going to get invited for future seasons?
I buy that, because they have, as much as Tori has negative interest in him, it seemed like they have negative chemistry with each other. So I totally buy the Seabass like trying to like make a name for himself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's totally plausible that he would go for someone like Tori. Like I think like she's his type, but that's it. You know, like that doesn't make any other sense.
Tori, I mean, Tori, look, Tori does love people who like nearly win the show. So, I mean, Stacey Best did nearly win Survivor. So, got that going for him.
We see right before the votes, Chris and Josh sort of strategizing to get Monty versus Tyler, which I think does align for Josh and Fessel. Like, while they do have sort of the big brother spokes and like potentially could be allies to Monty and Tyler, I do think like for the final, I'd be more concerned about a Tyler or a Monty than a Chris or a Sebastian. So sure, get Monty and Tyler in.
Yeah, totally. Works for that.
Though Fessel does vote for Sebastian, we do not see Josh's vote.
I wonder if there's a little jealousy there. Maybe Fessel's still feeling the Tory.
Get real. And the immortal words of another great RJB podcaster, grow up.
would be funny. Yeah. Monty, big push. Elimination. Anything before that?
I mean, I just say Bananas and Tori dressing up alike for this was so funny. And Fessel saying that they are wearing their best outfits is also hilarious. Like, they're not, neither of them, I feel like, would wear this outfit, but they both had this is what they could get pull off matching. So it looks like The Rock.
So my question is, did they both just actually have that, or did one of them have it and then one of them was borrowing it from someone else to match?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if both of them had it, because it's basically brown.
It didn't seem like it fit Bananas as well. I feel like he was the one that was borrowing more.
It's for anyone who didn't watch, I don't know why you wouldn't be watching, but Bananas and Tori wore maroon turtlenecks and brown leather jackets. And like, yeah, maybe it ends up being like, oh, should I wear Fessel's brown leather jacket if you're wearing a leather jacket? It's like, oh my God, wouldn't it be funny if we match? And then it's like, I think they pulled together whatever they could find in the house, whether it was like Tori's sweater and Michelle's jacket and Fessel's jacket and Corey's sweater, like some Frankenstein approach.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Although, you know what? Maybe they just each had it and they're destined to be together. So that would be even funnier.
It did not strike me as something that either of them would put together on just like a normal day out for either of them.
You never know. They pack weirdly for the show. They show up with like costumes and shit. So maybe they're like, hey, let's have some matching outfits in case we want it.
In case I want to dress as like a middle-aged librarian who's going to a Western party. Like, I don't, what's a costume here?
You got me.
All right. But they got Monty, as you said. 7 votes on Monty, 6 on Seabass, 1 on Cassidy, LOL West. Yep. I have to say, the least interesting outcome happens. Like, I was really hoping Sebastian would go in, even though I didn't really want Tyler to stick around. I just like, okay, the Hopper is supposed to make it so that this doesn't happen. But alas, Monty does go in.
Yeah, it was kind of odd because when TJ pulled it, it was like so obvious it was Monty. He's like, oh, yeah, obviously Monty. But it was like 7-6. So it was very much not obvious, but it did turn out to be Tyler versus Monty. And again, it's a fun like 2-episode arc, right? Where like people were trying to push last episode for Tyler versus Monty, and this episode it delivers. So maybe the challenge editors know what they're doing a little bit.
There you go. Ironically, for the BBVB elimination, we get a very Big Brother-esque challenge.
Yes, so much so that it almost felt like they screwed up the production of it, that it was just never gonna end. I kept waiting for like at 4 hours TJ to have to be like, all right, so we're changing the rules now. All you have to do is get like half the pyramid up, because there is just no way they thought this was gonna last as long as it did. But it lasted a long time.
Yeah, almost 3 full hours. I felt bad because I was like, all right, at some point I won't care if both of them go home, which like I feel like Monty got a kind of a raw deal. We didn't get to see much from him. But Tyler does pull it out.
Very anticlimactically, too. Just like they were cutting back and forth. They're like, oh my God, so close, kept falling. And then all of a sudden it just cuts to Tyler winning. I don't know why they couldn't like build up a little bit more. They show him getting the last couple and then winning. They just cut to him like hitting the button. It was like, oh, Tyler won. Okay, cool. But I guess I chose to show it.
Yeah, I mean, for an elimination that, I don't know if you call this not really a puzzle, more of like concentration, I don't know, finesse, whatever, stamina, like endurance. For a challenge like that, endurance, thank you. For a challenge like that, it was almost as exciting as like a headbanger to watch. Like I was, while I agree the end like got flubbed a little bit, like I really was like, oh my God, 4 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours 17. Oh my God. Like I was very interested in sort of the outcome. Totally. I didn't care who won, but I was interested in the challenge.
Totally. And they could have easily just not like shown the timestamps. I feel like they could have done stuff and just like edit it down and make it seem like it lasted 30 minutes, 45 minutes. I don't know. But I did appreciate them recognizing the length of it and showing it and enforcing how long it was.
Agreed. That's it.
Goes home. That's it.
I'm recognizing the length of this podcast. I just went to look and how long we've been on. Like I would have bet my life that this podcast was like over 45 minutes so far. It's not.
Well, next week we're going down to one episode. That'll be fun.
Ooh, we did it. We survived the weird scheduling.
Yeah. Oh man. Anything else?
No, unrelated. I just want to thank everyone for their support of the ALS fundraiser. Smash my original goal.
Woo.
Made my goal bigger. Smash that. Really, really appreciate the support, primarily from the listeners of this podcast. So thank you. Thank you all. The fundraiser is still going. It's in my pinned tweet. But really, thank you to everyone who donated. Appreciate it.
Good job. Good effort. You can subscribe. Robin,
oh, I forgot about the Brian down. Minute.
It's okay. We don't listen to the Brian Minute. It's late. Rooting for AmeriCorps this week. Keep the AmeriCorps train going. Robinswebsite.com/feed. You'll also be able to hear our, I think, hopefully exit interview with Monty tomorrow. I don't know. We'll find out. Follow me on Twitter, @ConanBryan_ and TikTok. And they can follow you.
Follow me at @LashTweets. Kiwi has been traveling, so we have been on Yadis on NGOG, but we'll pick that up in an undisclosed amount of time. Like it, pretend it's like a challenge daily. You don't know what time, how much time it's taking. No, but that'll be back at some point. But otherwise, follow me at @LashTweets.
Love it. All right, we'll be back next week. Back to solo episodes for episode 9. Till then, have a good one.